Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page. This is actually a special edition of The Front Page. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today we've been joined by Morehead State University President Dr. Wayne Andrews, along with Beth Patrick, who is the university's Chief Financial Officer, along with the Vice President for Administration and Fiscal Services. And welcome to you both. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks, Chuck. It's good to be here. Look forward to talking to you.
The one thing that we decided we'd talk about is Senate Bill 153, which involves performance-based funding for Kentucky's colleges and universities. And this is an idea that was put forth when Governor Bevin was actually running for office, and then he's following through with it now that he is in office. And this bill is moving through the legislature right now. And I wanted to kind of back up and give people an idea, first of all, what this bill is all about, so they really have a decent understanding so we can kind of set the foundation for the rest of what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, glad to do that, Chuck. You know, and actually the whole concept of performance or outcomes-based funding goes back several years. The president's, along with the leadership of the Council on Postsecondary Education, have been working on this idea for several years, so it wasn't new with Governor Bevin coming into office, but he certainly has pushed on it pretty hard. Here's the notion. We receive, every public institution in Kentucky receives some general fund appropriation. These are dollars that come to us in biennial budgets. At Morehead State University, for example, our general fund appropriation this year, as I recall, is about $40 million. And so what this idea is about performance or outcomes-based funding is that those dollars, that portion of our budget that's appropriated, would be given to us based upon our ability to demonstrate performance on some agreed-upon outcomes. So, for example, graduation rates, persistence rates, meaning the number of hours students earn in a given year, freshman year 30 hours, sophomore year 60 hours in total, junior year 90 hours, closing the achievement gaps between underrepresented minorities and the majority population, things of that nature. So those are three or four examples of some of the outcomes that would actually be measured. And the presidents as a group have not at all been opposed. In fact, we've said all along that we think performance-based funding is a reasonable concept. We worked on a study group related to this, and in fact, I signed off on the results of the study group work because it was time to move it out of that committee and get it into the General Assembly where policymakers could, in fact, look at it, raise questions about it, and make sure the bill, as it's been filed, will be good public policy. And there are some aspects of the bill that I think need to be improved, and I'm hopeful that some amendments will be passed to do so.
You mentioned that in the standards and the metrics I've heard could be different for each college and university based on their unique circumstances. Is that indeed the case right now?
No, it is not. In fact, the way the bill is written, we will all conform to the same standards and metrics. In fact, you know, there are some parts of the bill that, if we could have our complete way, we'd change it, but we're not going to be able to do that, obviously. But, for example, we went into the discussion of performance-based funding saying that in Kentucky, the universities, the colleges, the community colleges have pretty unique mission differences. So we thought initially that the research universities, UK and U of L, would be in a sector by themselves, that the comprehensive universities would be in a sector by themselves, and that KCTCS, the community college system, would be in a sector by itself. As it turns out, all of the universities are in one sector. So UK and U of L are in the same sector as the comprehensive universities, and KCTCS is in its own sector. We thought initially that, as has been the case in almost every state, there are about 30 states across the country that have put performance-based funding into effect. We thought that it would be very prudent not to put all of the base money at risk based on performance. In other words, phase it in over time, maybe to a certain limit. You know, maybe, I don't know what the right number is, maybe it's 10% of your base or 15% of your base or 20% of your base, but the way this bill is written, 100% of our base will be at risk through the performance funding formula. And then the outcome measures that I mentioned a moment ago would apply to everybody. That is graduation, numbers of graduates in the beginning as it relates to equilibrium. We'll come back to that point. And then ultimately it will be graduation rates and persistence rates and things of that nature.
Well, is it going to be 5% next year, then 100% the year after, Beth? Is that right?
There is a stop loss. 5% was removed from our budget this year to create the initial performance funding pool. And then in the next year, there will be a stop loss that will minimize the amount that an institution can lose. But starting in 2021, at that point, all stop loss and hold harmless clauses have expired, and 100% of our base would be at risk unless there's further action by the General Assembly.
Well, how much of this, when you talk about the state appropriation, when you look at Morehead State's overall revenue and how much it takes in, how much of that revenue does that appropriation account for?
About 40% of our E&G money. That's absent auxiliaries. So the money that we use for our instructional mission, our education in general money, there's really two primary sources. It's our tuition money, the money we collect in tuition, and our state appropriation. And between those two sources together form our education and general budget, and the general fund appropriation is about 40% of that total education and general budget.
We've talked about this before in the sense that higher education in Kentucky every year since 2008 has been cut. The other thing that people don't realize is that when you talk about money for, say, buildings and grounds, that's also been completely eliminated, even though we're talking about state-owned buildings and grounds, and that's, I guess, another cut all in itself.
Yeah, and then what's interesting about your comment there is that in every state, and I believe we've looked at all of these, and this has been discussed frequently, at least at the Council on Post-Secondary Education, every state that's implemented performance-based funding has done so with the injection of new money. So part of the carrot to get colleges and universities to go along is that let's put some new money on the table, and the new money would be at risk. Kentucky is not doing that. We're using existing base general fund appropriation, and we're putting that at risk. That is a significant problem, I think, with how we're approaching the work. And then, as I said, this approach is all of the money is in, not some general percentage of the money.
I think the one thing that you and I discussed before the show that there's an issue with, at least in your mind, is there is a clause. It's called equilibrium process, which addresses underfunding for some universities, which on the surface sounds like a pretty good idea, but when you delve into it, there might be some issues there.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Beth to comment on that because, fundamentally, if we could change anything about the bill, the way it's been presented, is that particular piece of this equilibrium piece, which we don't think is fair, and we know, based on the calculations we've done, that by 2021, when the whole harmless and the stop-loss provisions go away, there's a great potential for Morehead State University to have significantly less money than our sister comprehensive universities.
Well, the equilibrium process was actually raised. At that point, it was called equity, but now they're referring to it as equilibrium to address that equity. But several years ago, the issue of equity was brought up by one of our sister institutions by saying that their general fund appropriation per student was less than Morehead and some of the other institutions, Morehead being the highest among the comprehensives, and at that point Northern being the lowest. But that premise was shopped around and got a lot of attention because everybody would agree that funds per student should be equal. But what they weren't saying is that they were taking the general fund appropriation and dividing it by total students, and that particular institution has nearly 30% non-resident students. Well, by policy, non-residents are required to pay 100% of their direct instructional and student service cost. So the institution is receiving money through tuition for the non-resident students. So our premise has been if you take those out of the equation and you say Kentucky general fund appropriation by Kentucky resident or non-residents that are under a reciprocity agreement.
Explain that so people understand what that non-reciprocity or that reciprocity thing
is. Okay, sure. The CPE has several contracts with different schools and counties that are border counties. For example, we have one at Morehead State with Shawnee State University. So students in Greenup County that are right on the border of Ohio can cross the river and go to Shawnee State at resident rate tuition, at in-state tuition. Likewise, students that are in those counties in Ohio, southern Ohio, can come across the border and go to Kentucky institutions, go to Morehead State University at Ashland, for example, at resident rates. And so there are several of those around the state that where border students, it's kind of a quid pro quo. Citizens from one county of the state can go to the other county. So we treat those as resident students because one of our residents could be getting the same benefit. And so if you take the if you go back to the calculation of equity and you take Kentucky funds and you divide it by students that are Kentucky residents or reciprocity students, there is not an equity issue. But that wasn't explained when the whole issue of equity was shopped across the state with many of our legislators. They just looked at the calculation, the brief calculation of Kentucky residents by total, or I'm sorry, Kentucky funds by total students. And so that is where a lot of this came from, and it has continued, that calculation has continued to be part of the process in this equilibrium. The equilibrium formula, which is part of the performance funding, the first time the performance funding model is run, it will not only include Kentucky resident students, the volume of students that you have, it will count the volume of non-resident students. And so we have three institutions that have 20 and 30% non-resident populations.
Where did all this come from? How come this has slipped through? That's what I'm kind of curious, because it seems to, what you're telling me seems to make sense, obviously, but why is this still a part of a bill is what I'm wondering.
Well, I think part of it is the work group that debated this, and President Andrews was very adamant, very vocal throughout the entire thing, but you were talking about presidents who are obviously looking out for their institution, and there are more institutions that have higher populations of non-residents than there are institutions with small amounts. And so they were simply outvoted. And I believe, not to speak for the president, but I believe he had to go ahead and sign off to get it to the next level so that could be debated further by our individuals that represent our entire state and can look at it a little more broadly than just how's it going to impact my institution.
Hmm. Well, obviously there's some concerns there, and this is moving through as we talked about the legislature as we speak today. Where do things stand, and have you had a chance to talk to maybe some local legislators about this, and what's their response been?
Well, we've spent considerable time in the last 3 weeks in Frankfort, about 2 days a week, and I've met with dozens of legislators, including most of those that represent the communities that we serve at Morehead State University. And it's really a mixed bag. I mean, part of the concern is that, as you identified, Chuck, it's a complex subject. You know, so people, when you read the bill on the surface, bringing the institutions to equilibrium, that sounds like a good idea. But then when you peel back the onion and you start to talk about it, people think, well, gosh, I didn't realize that was in the bill. And then the bill's sponsor, Senator Givens, has been adamant to say that he doesn't want to see any changes to this bill, that there is a look-back provision in the bill that in 2021 the study committee that put all this together will be reconvened and will look back to see if there were any unintended consequences of the bill. Our concern is that with this equilibrium component, two institutions in the current enacted biennial budget, this budget that we're in right now, July 1st, Northern Kentucky University is going to receive $5.3 million addition to their base based on equity from the last when the budget was enacted. And Western Kentucky University will receive $2.6 million. And then the way the bill is written, July 1st this coming year, when they run that performance funding model that the CPE has developed with the aid of this study group, what's going to happen is that the institutions that have the highest volumes of measures, not rates, but volumes, so those with the largest graduation numbers, they're going to get more money than those with smaller graduation numbers. Well, where do you think Morehead State University fits in that equation? Eastern is bigger than we are. Western is significantly larger than we are, and Northern is significantly larger than we are. So where are the dollars going to go on that?
Based on numbers, not percentages.
Absolutely. And that is until equilibrium is reached. Once equilibrium is reached, then it'll shift to a rates-based calculation. Based on a rolling three-year average, they'll look at within the university sector, they'll calculate the graduation rate, for example. And if we exceed the rate at Morehead, we'll get a little bit more money on that variable. If we're lower than, we'll get less money. So it's that initial run-up or implementation of the bill where it's volumes-based that's going to hurt us, because there's going to be a lot of money flowing out. And we've done our own internal calculations. We've asked the CPE to present us with the model run for Kentucky resident reciprocity students, they won't give it to us. I know the calculation's been run, but we haven't seen the data. But we've modeled it ourselves. We know we're going to have less money as a result of this than the other institutions are, which will put us at a competitive disadvantage. So if down the road we have $2,000 or $3,000 less per student than a sister institution has, that means we'll have fewer dollars for scholarships, fewer dollars for academic support, student support services, and the like. So that's really our primary concern with the bill. I'm for performance funding. I've been saying that with everybody I've spoken with. I'm not against it. But it needs to be, this bill needs to be adjusted to be fair. Coming back to your question then, it would be nice if we could have a panel of all of our regional legislators that have significant students come to the university to have this conversation.
Do you plan to do that?
Well, we've been doing it individually. Whether we could get them, maybe one of the things we ought to do is public radio ought to host a forum here, and let's invite them all and have a discussion.
Well, when you talk about the year 2021, that's a long time to wait.
It is, and as the president mentioned, if implemented the way it is, with new money, Morehead would not lose anything significantly in dollars, but we would be at a competitive disadvantage because the other institutions would have a lot more things to wrap all the services around students to make sure that they are successful, whether it's financial assistance, academic assistance, all those things that are critical for making sure that students are successful. So we'll be at a competitive disadvantage there. And in 3 years, as we begin really to be in the rates-based performance funding, we will be already behind in that process. Just because we have less money to be able to provide our students with the services that they're able to provide at our competitive institutions.
We've talked here recently about enrollment the last 3 years has decreased, and you're hoping to rebuild that. But as you try to rebuild that with less funding, I'm just wondering what could occur.
Well, that's essentially the concern that we have. I mean, we are in the midst of developing a strategic enrollment plan. We've hired a new vice president for student success, Jason Bentley, who's doing a terrific job with analytics. We are positioning the university for the next several years to kind of address the enrollment issue. And, Chuck, it's important to point out, part of the issue for us, a significant part of the enrollment issue for Morehead State University, is the out-migration in eastern Kentucky due to the downturn in the extractive industries. So, I mean, this is not a qualitative issue. It's not a competitive issue that we're not able to compete with our competitors. We're losing market share because of out-migration. And so it's a very serious concern. Let me say, too, you asked about legislators that we've talked with. The one person that has been absolutely adamant to help with this issue is Representative Rocky Adkins. I mean, he understands the details of this. He serves on the House A&R Committee. That committee is going to meet tomorrow. And Representative Adkins is prepared to challenge this equilibrium part of this because he doesn't believe it's fair and equitable, and he's been very vocal about it. But he is the only legislator that I have spoken with that is adamantly, strongly opposed to that particular language in the bill.
From what I understand, also, you have some legislators that you tried to talk to that have not returned your calls.
That's very true. We've tried to approach all of our area legislators in our time in Frankfurt, and some have been too busy to talk with us.
Well, and that's unfortunate because obviously this is an important issue when you talk about a regional university that serves the most impoverished area of the state. And when you talk about rebuilding Eastern Kentucky, and we've talked about the SOAR initiative and things like that, I would think Morehead State would be a key element in that rebuilding process.
Right. So when this bill was voted on in the Senate, for example, there was only one dissenting vote in the Senate, and that was Senator Jimmy Higdon, who is a Morehead State University graduate. All others, including our senators in this region, voted to support the bill as it was developed. Now, it's not finished. It'll go to the House A&R Committee tomorrow. We'll see what happens there. I don't know whether the bill will be amended. If it is amended, it'll have to go to a conference committee. There could be some compromise. But the majority in Frankfurt right now doesn't want to compromise on any of these bills. They want to pass them exactly as they're written. And they probably have the votes to do it.
I'll ask you this about Rocky Adkins, who's now House Minority Leader, formerly the Majority Leader. obviously he doesn't have the juice he did before, but he can still have a voice in this issue and make some statements and present the case. How successful do you think he might be?
Well, I never underestimate the power of a legislator that has standing, and Rocky has a lot of standing with his colleagues. And, you know, he views this as an equity issue, a fairness issue. He believes that higher education has made a lot of progress since reform in 1997, and that, you know, the General Assembly has been unable or unwilling to fund higher ed at the level it needs to. And you mentioned at the outset, Chuck, that since 07-08, we've had continuous budget cuts. In fact, higher education since 07-08 has lost more than 20% of its general fund appropriation in 2016 dollars. I mean, we've taken significant hits. And as you know, last year we furloughed people for the first time in our history, and we laid people off, which was very, very uncomfortable. And it's a shame that we had to do it, but we had to balance a budget.
Now, if this thing does go through with the equilibrium process intact as it's written right now, what can you do?
Well, our only alternatives, as I said earlier, we have two primary sources of revenue, and that is our state general funds and our tuition. Morehead is the lowest, I think we're $2 short of being the lowest tuition of all the comprehensives. And so our only alternative is to raise tuition or cut expenditures. And as the president mentioned, we've cut expenditures to the point of just there really is nothing left to cut and be able to continue to support all of the programs and services that we do today. And we have a limited amount of flexibility within our service region to raise tuition and still have tuition affordable to the students from Eastern Kentucky. 50% of our students come to us are Pell eligible. 60% of our students are coming from family incomes less than $65,000 a year. And so for us to raise our tuition up equal to our peers that are in the more metro rates is just unreasonable. Yet we still have the same costs of things like technology, retirement incomes, health benefits, competitive faculty salaries. Our costs are the same as those institutions that are like us in the more metro areas with stronger economies. But we're going to be hamstrung not only from state appropriations, but also from tuition, because the CPE restricts what our tuition can be, even if our market could support a higher tuition.
It's kind of a catch-22 in a way. Well, I know there's someone who's listening out there who said, well, just, you know, enroll more kids. That's what you do. You enroll more kids. But at the same time, you're under pressure to graduate more kids, so you've got to get more qualified kids in here with better scores who can compete in the classroom. You can't lower your ACT to, say, 14 or whatever and expect these kids to graduate. So in some ways, that's not the total answer.
No, and you've hit the nail right on the head. So what's the danger with this kind of a proposition? I have colleagues in Tennessee, where I served previously in another institution, where performance funding is in place. And I've talked to some community college presidents there that have told me that the model they're following is you enroll everybody that you can possibly enroll. Now, I don't think that's what we want to do. We've had as our mission at Morehead State University since 1887 to serve the people of Eastern Kentucky first and foremost. And I think that if you compare us to all the regional universities, I think we do that as well as anybody does. We've never left that traditional mission. We embrace it. It's really important to our region. In the times that we're in right now, it's more important than ever. But the truth is we're going to have to look outside the region, right? Without migration, we're going to have to go into new markets, out of state, international, wherever it will take us. And what I don't want to see happen, and part of our argument has been we don't want the Commonwealth of Kentucky, through these various actions, to cause the university to abandon its historical mission. I have grave concerns about that. And so, you know, we're trying to get people to see the consequences of this particular clause in this particular bill. And it's really the equilibrium part. We're okay with the general performance funding stuff. We believe we can compete adequately on that score. But on this equilibrium, there is no competition. You know, we're going to lose.
Well, we've got time for just a bit more. I will give you both the floor. I know you'd probably like to say one more thing and maybe urge people to get involved in this process in some way.
Well, I would. I mean, I'm pleased that you invited us to come over this morning to talk about this. I would encourage people that are listening, that are concerned about the future funding for Morehead State University and its ability to deliver on the mission, to pick up the telephone and to call Frankfurt and to leave a message for whomever your local senator or elected representative is, and just say, you know, you're concerned about this, you've heard it expressed, and you would ask them to look very carefully at Senate Bill 153 and the equilibrium provision in the bill. We're not opposed to, and we're not saying tell people to kill the bill. We're just suggesting that if we could amend it and with respect to equilibrium, do the calculation based on in-state Kentucky resident students and reciprocity students. That would solve that problem.
Beth?
I think I would add to that the only thing is that even outside of our service region, if you believe as a Kentucky taxpayer that your tax dollars should go to subsidize Kentucky resident students and not non-resident students, you should support the amendment that we're asking, is that the bill only count the outcomes of student resident students and reciprocity students, not and exclude non-residents and international students, because they, again, by policy, have to pay their full cost of instruction and student services. So why should we then, again, count them in distributing state dollars?
Thanks to both of you for coming over.
Well, Chuck, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you this morning. Thank you.
Morehead State University President Dr. Wayne Andrews and Beth Patrick, Chief Financial Officer and Vice President of Administration and Fiscal Services here at MSU. I'm Chuck Mraz on this special edition of Front Page. We'll see you next time.